The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
If not now, if not now, tell me when.
Good morning, everyone. Happy Easter. Back in the spring of 2013, Doug Mutter, a contributing editor of our UU World magazine, published an article titled, Wrestling with Easter. I love being a Unitarian Universalist, Mutter, he wrote. And I love the New England Church, where I've been a member for nearly 20 years. But I don't show up for Unitarian Universalist Easter services anymore. I just don't know what I'm celebrating. It's Easter. Jesus is risen. Unless maybe he isn't. Maybe he just lived on in the memory of his disciples in some metaphoric way that seemed important, especially important to them. Not that it matters, because God was never going to send us to hell anyway. Assuming there is a God and an afterlife. But the Jews just celebrated Passover, and the spring flowers are blooming. Rejoice! What do I do with that? Well, maybe you too wonder at times what to do with Easter, and just what you're content and comfortable singing hallelujahs about. But I think you'll be glad you showed up here this morning to join us on Easter Sunday 2022, because our guest minister, Reverend Andrew Weber, will explore with us Easter awakenings that the doubter and even the outright non-believer can embrace. Andrew Weber, you may recall, is a Unitarian Universalist minister currently living in Newark, Delaware with his wife and their two children. He's a part-time fitness coach at the University of Delaware, a part-time supply minister at area congregations like our own, and a stay-at-home parent. And all these pieces together create a path for him to help people and communities live into their best selves. And he reflects on living a faith-informed life in an online blog titled, How to Drive Like a Minister. How does a minister drive? Anyway. If you just type How to Drive Like a Minister into Google, it'll take you right to it. Andrew is no stranger to us here, of course. He's led worship several times at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, most recently this past January. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship. And on behalf of the committee and the fellowship as a whole, I welcome Andrew back to our pulpit, and I welcome you, all of you, whoever you are, from wherever you've come, wherever you may be on your life's journey, on your spiritual journey, whatever you must, in conscience, truly, responsibly believe, however you identify or express your gender, whomever you love, whoever loves you, we welcome you to worship with us in a faith community, exploring new paths to kindness and spiritual growth. And a special welcome if you're joining us for the first or second time, or for the first time in a long time. If you're not already or not still connected with us, please fill out our visitor's card. If you're joining us online, you'll find a link to that card in the online chat box. If you're here with us in person, you can request one from our greeter, who's Linda Weaver this morning, right? Oh, Kay. Kay was our greeter this morning. Where's Kay? Oh, she's out there. She's still out there, right? Press one, right? Yeah. Filling out that form affords you the opportunity to keep abreast of programs and activities here at our fellowship. Now, Reverend Weber will lead us in reciting our opening words, responsive reading number 682, Rolling Away the Stone, after which we'll light our chalice. And the text for the reading will appear on the screen behind me or on your computer screen at home.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My family's here today. Let us join. join together in worship today. I will read the first voice of our opening words, and if you would please respond with the second voice. In the tomb of the soul, we carry secret yearnings, pains, frustrations, loneliness, fears, regrets, worries.
In the tomb of the soul, we take refuge from the world and its heaviness.
In the tomb of the soul, we wrap ourselves in the security of darkness.
Sometimes this is a comfort, sometimes it is an escape.
Sometimes it prepares us for experience. Sometimes it insulates us from life.
Sometimes this tomb life gives us the time to feel the pain of the world and reach out to heal others. Sometimes it numbs us and locks us up with our own concerns.
In this season where light and dark balance the day, we seek balance for ourselves.
Grateful for the darkness that has nourished us, we push away the stone and invite the light to awaken us to the possibilities within us and among us, possibilities for new life in ourselves and in our world.
If you would please light our chalice, Jerry. In this hopeful spirit, we come together. Come, let us invite the light into our lives. Come, let us worship together.
And now, as I light the peace lamp, please respond, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us. And speaking of singing alleluias, it's time now for our gathering song, Lo, the Earth Awakes Again. It's a makeover of one of the most popular hymns for Easter, Jesus Christ is Risen Today. Those of you who grew up in a mainstream Christian denomination may have sung those words, right? It's a hymn so popular that it appears in no fewer than 459 Christian hymnals, right? Now, the text for our Lo, the Earth Awakes Again was written by 19th century Unitarian minister Samuel Longfellow. Reverend Longfellow was an excellent writer who had the misfortune of being the brother of the famous poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, so his accomplishments as a writer were greatly overshadowed. And singing this song on Easter has become a tradition in our fellowship. And you may be wondering, may I sing this morning? The answer is yes. Provided you're properly masked, feel free to join the choir of the Unitarian Universalist Society of Grafton and Upton, Massachusetts, in singing, Lo, the Earth Awakes Again. The lyrics will appear in the video on the screen behind me or on your computer screen. Lo, the Earth Awakes Again.
From the winter's cold and pain,
very special musical selection this morning. Our own Christine Winchester Perry wrote a song called They Say Believe. And it sort of fits in with the theme here about what it is that we can embrace, have a tradition, and how we answer certain questions which others seem to have ready and absolute answers to, right? And Christine will tell us about the creation of the song, and then we'll watch a performance of the song. Right?
Well, you'll hear a performance of it anyway. Well, as many of you know, I'm one of those rare birds, someone who was born into a Unitarian Universalist household, since my parents were both UUs in Brooklyn, New York, when I was born. Through spiritual discussions with my parents all my life, I knew that they identified as atheist and agnostic, and they were proud of that. This really shaped my beliefs over the years. As a very young child, we attended the Unitarian Church in Morristown, New Jersey, but my clearest early memories of UU, of being a UU, were at the Unitarian Church in Reading, Pennsylvania. When I was 13, we moved to upstate New York, and my family did not attend any church for about 10 years. Later, as a young adult, I began regular attendance in Philadelphia. But during that 10-year span, I never stopped considering myself a UU through and through. Part of that identity, and one that I struggled with as a teenager, was feeling different from other people. I was proud of our UU values and guidelines, but I was embarrassed when the topic of religion came up, and I didn't discuss it much with non-UUs. In my mind, everyone believed in God except my family. Just believe, they would say. Just have faith. Sometimes I would feel some of that herd mentality kick in, and I would say to myself, maybe millions of people aren't wrong after all. I'd start questioning the beliefs in which I was brought up. Was I just blindly following an atheist philosophy simply because it's what my parents believed? And I was no different, than all those people who were blindly following a faith-based dogma that could not be proven. Around age 20, a friend whom I was very close with in high school became a born-again Christian, and she confronted me one day about my beliefs. She genuinely cared about my well-being and was eager and excited to share with me this new truth that she had found and discovered. She was worried for me if I didn't accept Christ as my Savior so that I would be saved. I don't remember exactly what I said to her that day, but I'm sure I tried to keep an open mind, and as UUs, we are taught to do, and not belittle or dismiss her spiritual choices. My confusion was captured in a song I wrote back then, which we will hear now. Listen in the song for two voices, one of the young, questioning 20-year-old UU, and the other, the proselytizing evangelical Christian, beseeching me to see the light, as it were. Please enjoy They Say Believe.
I'm lost in the world and all its words. Sort it out. I'm tied up in all the things I've heard. What's life all about? What's our role? What's our part? Why do we even exist? Why can't I accept God in my heart? Is there an open door? eternity.
Thank you, Christine, for that wonderful reflection in music. Happy Easter. Happy Easter. It's interesting. I was at a sunrise service this morning with some Presbyterian and UCC colleagues, and when you say Happy Easter to a group of Christians, you get a very different response. just noting that. And even though our culture tends to put a lot more stress on Christmas, Easter is theologically the most important holiday of the Christian faith. Many of us know this story. I'll just say it very quickly. It's a story which includes justice, deep caring, love, and profound loss. Jesus of Nazareth was a man who lived about 2,000 years ago. And he spent his young adult life walking around and sharing a message of uncomfortable peace, radical hospitality, and obedience to a divine law above human rules. People gathered to hear him, and many of those people cared very deeply for Jesus. He had 12 followers who were especially close to him and helped him preach his message of love. But as we know, Jesus was not always liked. Challenging people and challenging communities to live into their best selves means taking bold and sometimes unpopular stances, but that's exactly what Jesus did. Saying that there is divine morality, which is more important than human law, can get you into trouble. Any protester who breaks the law for social justice knows that this is the case. You don't chain yourself to the redwoods unless you think there's a higher good than that created by humans. Jesus was countercultural, he was counter-authority, and he made many powerful people very upset with him, to put it mildly. Right? He kept getting in legal problems, both with his Jewish faith community and with the Romans, the Roman government. And eventually, one of his followers helped the authorities arrest him. We know this story. The religious governmental authorities wanted to get rid of Jesus, but they're unsure of what exactly to do with him. There was some bureaucratic passing back and forth of his legal case, and eventually he was sentenced to death. Jesus was put on death row, to put it in vernacular terms. The story of Jesus' life and death is recorded in the Bible with a few different variations, even in that one manuscript. And there's dispute as to what exactly happened historically. But there are religious truths which come through. Listen to this version of Jesus' death and burial from the book of Luke. It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m, while the sun's light failed and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Then Jesus, crying with a loud voice, say, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. When the centurion saw what had taken place, he praised God and said, "Certainly this man was innocent." And when all the crowds who had gathered there for the spectacle saw what had taken place, they returned home beating their breasts. But all his acquaintances, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance watching these things. Now there was a good and righteous man named Joseph who, though a member of the council, had not agreed to the plan of action. He came from the Jewish town of Arimathea, and he was waiting expectantly for the kingdom of God. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in a linen cloth, and laid it in a rock-hewn tomb where no one had ever been laid. It was the day of preparation, and the Sabbath was beginning. The women who had come with him from Galilee followed, and they saw the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and ointments. On the Sabbath, they rested according to the commandment. And then we come to the part of the story we often skip over, the days of despair. But I want to pause right there. I want to pause so we can start to understand what is happening. A beloved friend, an inspired teacher, has been unjustly killed by the authorities. His friends, his devotees, are without hope. They're without guidance. They're without faith. Joseph asks for his friend's body and gives Jesus a more respectful burial. And the irony now is that the date of this, of his death, is now commemorated with Good Friday, right? It's good. Now, the reason for calling it Good Friday is contested of why actually it's called that, but what is remembered is a day which was anything but good. A dear friend, trusted teacher, a wise sage, killed because he had a vision of peace on earth. And that's why Easter, and specifically Holy Saturday, that's the day before Easter, yesterday, is so important. What happened yesterday? If you look at the biblical accounts or think about the story, what happens on Saturday? Nothing. Nothing at all. There's nothing. Jesus has been killed. His body was in the tomb. The Bible doesn't tell us much, but it's probable that his followers were doing the same thing we find them doing on Sunday morning. They're meeting together behind closed doors in fear and in despair. Saturday is when it felt as if their hopes, their dreams have been squashed. They waited, for Messiah, the person they had been anticipating and they thought was here, was just killed as a criminal. Now, the reason I pause here is that because yesterday is so important. Yesterday is important because we all have those dark times. We all have dark times of our soul, times when it looks like all hope is lost. We don't know how to go forward. Easter recognizes this terrible, recognizes this awful, painful reality that is included in all of being human. The Friday to Sunday period is when each of us is met in our lowest and our saddest moments. Part of living is that you will feel loss. If you have not already in your life, you will feel loss. It's a given. You will feel pain. Christian churches traditionally cover their altar in a black cloth, and they don't say the word hallelujah for the 40 days of Lent, partly representing this time of grieving. And what comes next? What comes next? What comes after the death of a beloved teacher? Well, what comes next is the first Easter morning. So listen here to a passage from Mark. When the Sabbath was over, remember the Sabbath was Saturday in those times. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. Now, I'm going to be candid here. There are many ways we can set up to ignore this story, right? I mean, it's scientifically unbelievable. The only accounts were written many years after the proposed facts, and they conflict with each other. I mean, it's a miracle, Easter miracle. They conflict with each other, even within the Bible. So you open up the Bible, you look at one passage and the next, and they conflict internally, right? And the entire theme was probably borrowed from another religion. There are many, many models of gods who died and then were reborn, right? In Norse belief, there's Odin. Greek has Dionysus. Hindu, Ganesha. Egyptian, Osiris. Mesoamerican, Quetzalcoatl, to name like just a few, and most of which of these predate Christianity. But stories have power. Stories have truth. Sometimes they have truth despite their being borrowed, despite their historical inaccuracy. Romeo and Juliet is an extremely powerful story of vengeance, of romance, notwithstanding it being fiction and also being a borrowed story based on a popular theme. A theme which is borrowed again in West Side Story, itself a very powerful piece. The fact is that these stories transcend their containers, right? We just need to liberate ourselves. We just need to get past our religious prejudice and hear the transcendent message. The power and challenge of the Easter message of transformation, of awakening, isn't lessened whether you believe in a God or not. It's bigger than that. It's bigger than that. And just like the story of Romeo and Juliet, the story of Jesus dying and being reborn speaks to something larger than itself. There are witnesses. These stories are witnesses awakening us to a larger and a deeper truth in the world. Instead of staying dead, Jesus came back to life, proving the power of life over death. And this brings us to where Unitarian Universalists generally go with Easter. Usually, we go with what is comfortable and well understood to our religious culture. For Unitarian Universalists, the common Easter service is pointing to the natural world and to springtime and saying, "Look, here's Easter. Look at the flowers awakening. Look at the birds chirping. Easter is here and it is good." And that's great. Celebrating nature is good. It's useful to keep it in our minds. Look at the new shoots, the life coming from death. The world transformed, renewed, reborn, awakened. Death to any individual is not death to life with a big L. Because life goes on. Our material selves will be reborn in new organisms. As organisms are reborn in us, we all eat animals and plants, and we become new life. That's how life works. That's resurrection. That's transformation, right? The world is always transforming death into life. Easter reminds us that even when something dies, when I die, life will go on. Easter's a time for me to celebrate the great mystery of life, the sustainability that humans are but a mere part of, so we can awaken ourselves from feeling that death is the end, for life will always go on. I mean, just look at some of the pagan symbols that have survived into our borrowed holiday of Easter, right? Easter is not originally Christian. It's borrowed. It's co-opted from a pagan holiday. So look at eggs, rabbits, symbols of life, symbols of rebirth, which both predate Jesus. But we can go further. I say we can go further than seeing Easter as a parallel to the equinox celebration. Because there's faith in rebirth, not only of physical life from death, but also spiritual, personal rebirth, spiritual and personal awakening. We can at any moment be reborn into a new person. This is again where Easter transcends Christianity. Yes, it's a story about a God dying and coming back to life, but it's a story much, much larger than Jesus, much larger than one faith. Easter is about knowing deep in our bones that redemption is possible. Did you think you'd hear about redemption today in Unitarian Universalist Church? Easter is knowing about redemption is possible. Redemption as a way to move on from our dark times. Redemption as a way to not let our failings define us. You are not defined by your failures. That's redemption. Redemption as a path from our feelings of death into feelings of life. When we fail, when we make mistakes, for we will, there's always hope, and there's always the possibility for love and for life. Easter is a time, it's both very personal and very universal at the same time. We have a message that hope will never die, that even in our darkest hour, there is still some glimmer of light. Even when we feel like we are at an end, Easter is the chalice lit in the darkness, letting us know that a loving way is indeed possible. We have lit our chalice to stand as a beacon for peace, for justice, for hope in a hurting world. We can let that light and the metaphorical light of Easter be a light for us when we need hope, when we are in despair. The message is that we have faith that our lives will go on in those around us and in the decisions and the impacts we made. It's hope that life will go on even when it doesn't seem possible. It's faith that we can be reborn, we can be transformed, we can awaken to a new moment. We can awaken from moment to moment. It's a personal reminder that we can also change at any time. And even this personal metaphorical resurrection is not an easy one to embody. Right? We constantly have a belief of who we are and what we do. I have a concept of what I do and who I am. I know that Andrew acts this way, or Andrew does these certain things. And part of who I am, I feel, is good. It's beneficial to me. It's beneficial to other people. And part of who I am and how I act is harmful to myself and harmful to other people. Now, being open to resurrection, being open to this hope, is being open to transformation, means being open to letting go of my own definition of myself and being able to redefine myself. Wow, it's challenging. The challenge of awakening and liberating from our own boundaries. This isn't easy, because herein lies the difficulties of embodying this personal resurrection. And when I say resurrection, I'm talking about a radical openness to transformation, a radical openness to redefining ourselves. The term resurrection isn't, I don't think, to be used lightly. It's about being awakened to really challenging who we are, to be constantly in that state of resurrection, of possibilities, of awakening. It can also be, it's good to be mindful of who you are, what your strengths and weaknesses are, but it can also be very debilitating to define yourselves by those weaknesses. So being open to resurrection and transformation means having faith that change is always possible. It's always possible. Faith that I don't have to define myself by my faults. Faith that the Andrew I see now doesn't have to be the Andrew of the future. I can practice resurrection, and I can live into the Andrew I want to be. We are all able to change and become different manifestations of ourselves. As we respond in anger when we want to love, as we scream when we want to breathe, as we hate when we want to love, when we are living into the negative ways of acting we have written for ourselves, we need to remember that we don't have to continue. It's never too late for redemption. It's never too late for that resurrection. It's never too late to awaken, to be a better person, to be your best selves. Even when our commitments are lying broken on the ground, after we have spouted hate or broken our vows, even then, we can still be transformed. In Easter, resurrection comes after death. That's good to remember. For even when we are broken and battered, we can still reach out to ourselves, we can still reach out to others, we can still reach out to our faith and be transformed, be resurrected into our best selves. So as I reflect on the service, I'm taking three main points. And this is me saying what I'm taking, also maybe saying this maybe is what you want to take. The three main points I'm taking are, the first is that there is a deep spiritual truth in borrowed stories, which may be factually suspect. The story transcends the container. The second is that life is not the end. Life will always find a way to go on. And third, and possibly the most personal and the most important, is that we can always reevaluate, transform, awaken, and resurrect at any moment to be better living into our best selves. We can live with the reality, the mystery of Easter today and all days. I end with a quote from Parker Palmer. The reality is that sooner or later, we will all have been taken, sooner or later, all we have will be taken from us by death. All we have will be taken from us by death. But if we can live with the threat of resurrection in our bones, then we will live truly and well. Then we will join in a corporate witness that is immortal, a witness that is only strengthened by the forces of death, a witness that is in itself the resurrection life. In our wonderful matrix of life, death and hate do not have to have the final word. Happy Easter and amen.
Happy
Easter. Sing.
Thank you very much, Andrew. That we have a musical meditation. It's kind of a special feature this morning. As you know, because of COVID and other issues, we've not had a fellowship singers group perform in this sanctuary for several years. And this morning, we're going to resurrect the fellowship singers. And we're delighted that Deb Galvin, who was the accompanist here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship for 25 years, was it? Somewhere around there. Is back here this morning to accompany us. So I'd ask the singers to come forward, and I'm going to do two numbers for you. The first, Spring Has Now Unwrapped the Flowers, which picks up on this theme of the rebirth of nature in spring. And then we're going to do an interlude, doing Matters of the Heart, that talks about resurrection and what it, the deeper meaning of it.
Oh.
Okay, we've come to that time of our service that we call Matters of the Heart, where you may share a joy or a concern with our community, with all of us here in the sanctuary and all of us on Zoom. While you're gathering your thoughts, the fellowship singers are going to sing a second piece, a musical interlude. So please join them in singing Now the Green Blade Riseth, hymn number 266.
Now the green blade riseth from the buried grain, wheat that in dark earth many days has lain. Love lives again that with the dead has been. Love is come again like wheat that springeth.
In the grave they laid him, of by hatred slain, thinking that never he would wake again. Laid in the earth, like grain that sleeps unseen,
love is come again, like wheat that springeth green. When our hearts are wintry, grieving or in pain, love's touch can call us back to life again. Fields of our hearts that dead and bare have been, love is come again like wheat that spring.
We'll bring this time of sharing to a close with a sung response. A little variation, as you know, usually we sing Spirit of Life, but this morning we're going to sing Return Again. This is hymn number 1011 in our teal hymnal, and it reinforces some of the things we've talked about. And hearing Christine's announcement, for instance, knowing that Joanne's mother is in hospice at St. Mary's, and so forth, that we're constantly living in that shadow of death, and the question is, are we going to carry a light with us that somehow brings life again to be the important thing and not the death? So, Return Again.
Spirit of Resurrection, remind us of the power of hope to triumph over fear, the power of love to prevail over the horrors of hate, the potential for peace to be victorious over hostility. Blessed be, and amen.
Now we extinguish our chalice, but not the flame of hope, the light of truth, the warmth of community. These we take with us into the world to share with those whose lives we touch, whose lives touch our own. And now please join in singing our closing song, another Easter chestnut, O Day of Light and Gladness, after which we'll have announcements and also time for informal conversation online or in the lobby. And gathering and holding conversations in the lobby is a personal decision. If you do choose to stay in the lobby after the service, you can, of course, remove your mask to enjoy snacks and beverages, if any. Please be mindful of others in the space, though, and be safe.